Hello, hello. Welcome to Pod Bless Texas. I'm Lillian Salerno here at the Pod Bless Texas World Headquarters with my co-host, Kendall Scudder.
Hi, how are you?
Doing just great. How are you, friend?
I am just tickled to be here. I feel so well rested.
Yes, we got in about, 2:30 last night?
Sounds about right.
From our trek down to Richmond, Texas.
We can't talk about it too much because we're going to spoil my obsessed.
Okay, never mind.
You'll hear about it soon.
And so excited about our third mic here with us today. The fantastic and beautiful and has my favorite jewelry on. Judge Dominique Collins, who's the judge of the Criminal District Court 4 here in Dallas County.
Yay! Hello, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Do you love being described as the having my favorite jewelry on?
Yes, I love that.
Good, good, good.
It's beautiful. And I know you've been up a long time also.
I have.
You woke up right about the time we were getting home.
Yes.
So for people who don't know Judge Collins, she is this remarkable judge that we have here in Dallas County, and we're lucky to have here, who's been doing incredible work in the veteran community. Let's talk about that a little bit. Describe it to our listeners who aren't familiar with your work.
All right. So we have a Dallas County Veterans Court. We've been going for about 11 years. I got involved in 2014. I became the judge in that court January 1st, 2013. And so when I was running, Judge Snipes, who started the court, said, you know what, if you run and you win, you may have Veterans Court because I'm probably going to retire.
Wow.
So I won and I said, all right, let me have it. I'm ready. Pass it.
And why did they want to give it to you?
Because I'm a veteran. I spent 12 years in the Air Force active duty, and 7 months of that was in the first Gulf War. So I'm a veteran. I love veterans. It's who I am. When I got out in 2001, I'd always wanted to go to law school. Always. And so I thought that I would marry my wanting to be a lawyer with my military career. And so I got out in 2001 and I thought that I would go to law school and then come back. And so I took my four-year-old baby. I quit my job, sold my house, went to law school. So we're in law school in San Antonio. In the second week of law school, I just dropped her off at daycare and the planes hit. And so I was like, you know, I can't be in the military anymore. You know, now I'm a mom. The first time I went, we had no idea when we'd come back, and I stayed gone 7 months and 6 days. It was supposed to be 30 days. And so now that I have this four-year-old baby, and if you're a mom, it's your job is to guard and protect your children's hearts, minds, and private parts. And so I guess my military career goodbye. I thought it was over.
Wow. And so this has been awesome for you to be able to.
Oh, it's so
you were able to take over the veteran school.
Mm-hmm. So I became a prosecutor. The first job I got out of law school was as a prosecutor. And so I was doing that. I practiced.
Who was the DA then?
Bill Hill.
Okay.
I remember when he called me and offered me the job. It was like J.R. Ewing called me. Have you heard his accent? Like, it's very cool.
No, his accent is like that.
I was like, Jared's on the phone. He wants me to work in there.
I'm going to be on Dallas.
He wants me to work in Dallas. Oh, my God.
No, he did have a voice like that.
He's very cool. Mm-hmm. Yep. So I worked there, and I was having a great experience, whatever. And then Craig Watkins, and then that was it. So I just was under Mr. Hill and then Craig Watkins. And so I worked in all sections. And the last 3 years of my time at the DA's office, I worked in mental health. And if you're a prosecutor, you get a job like that and you're like, really, not so much, because every lawyer, every prosecutor, you want to, walk around and talk to a jury. You want to say the Perry Mason line, were you lying then? Are you lying now? And, and you're like,
how long have you been beating your wife?
Right. And when you're
you can't handle the truth.
I wanted to say that, too, and I have not yet. Maybe one day. And so they had me do that job, and I remember crying, and it was the best job I never wanted.
Wow.
The best. Because I learned a lot about people. I learned how to be a better human, a better mom, a better lawyer and a judge, everything. And so because it's a holistic practice of law.
Absolutely.
It's not one-dimensional because there's all kind of problems. Some of the problems have nothing to do with the people. Some of them are brain injuries. Some of them were born addicted to things and, whatever. So I was doing that. So the judges saw me doing that, to include finding them housing. Mm-hmm. It's continuity of care and the whole person concept. A prosecutor's finding this guy housing, have you lost your mind? But I'm like, how do I make him stop doing drugs and stop doing crime if I don't have a place for him to live where he can keep his medicine, take his meds, get his food, have a stable life? That's how you get them to stop. They're not going to really stop coming back to jail when they're mentally ill, but if you can keep them coming back less,
right,
then it's a win. So some judges saw me doing that, and one of them specifically, I will leave her a name, but she knows who she is, and she knows I love her, said, hey, come here. And I was like, what is it? She says, have you thought about running for a bench? And I said, kind of. She says, well, so-and-so's, Judge Cruiser is retiring. Mm-hmm. I think you ought to run for his bench. And I thought, that's so nice, lady. Have a lovely day. I'll tell my parents. You said, I'm wonderful. And then I thought about it. I talked to him. I talked to other people, and I ran.
What year was that?
It was 2012.
12. Okay, that was your first.
And you know that politics is a blood sport.
It is.
Particularly if you are a woman, and I would say even more so if you're a woman of color, more so then.
Absolutely.
Total blood sport. You know, it's kind of like, why are you doing this, and who do you think you are? Right. You've been practicing law 7 years.
Who gave you permission?
We had all these white dudes lined up for that seat.
And the guy I ran against had been practicing law for 22 years, and he'd been around and more established and, you know, more everything. And it was kind of like, why would you do this, and who do you think you are, and you've been practicing law 7 years? And so I ran, and I said, you know, I spent 12 years in the military, and I spent 7 months getting bombs thrown at me, so you may talk to me like that, so you continue to do so, sir.
Good for you.
You know, I have 7 years of legal experience, and it was a, you know, it was a wide breath, but I also have life experience, and I have mom experience, and I've lived, and I've done a whole bunch of stuff, and so go ahead with that.
That is amazing. We're lucky to have you on the court here.
Oh, but for veterans, that's what I was going to tell. I'm sorry. So in Texas, you know, we have tons and tons of veterans.
Yep.
Because we have all these great benefits that other states don't have, like Texas Land Board, in addition to your normal VA, the Hazelwood Act, which is, you know, you get 150 free hours at a state school. So there's reasons why veterans come back here, besides that we are the great state of Texas, and we are great.
Absolutely.
But so we have lots of veterans. They come back with seen and unseen wounds, you know, survivor's remorse, you know, the rest of your unit, something happened to them, but it was your day off, or you were standing over here and you didn't get it. Survivor's remorse is a huge thing. Traumatic brain injuries, PTSD, military sexual trauma. Then there's the drinking culture, you know, military drinking culture, which we'll get to in a minute.
Yep.
I have something for you for that. anyway, so we have all these people who come back and get in trouble. They encounter the justice system. We have a lot of DWIs. We have a lot of evadings. And that has to do with a lot of maybe the driving techniques you learn when you're in the war.
So right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so there's these different things.
Never even occurred to
mm-hmm.
me.
Yeah, there's a lot of aggression, you know, on the road, in the family, at the workplace. All these things happen. And so the veterans apply to our court. Now, I take everybody on a case-by-case basis. The only people I say, no, I won't dance with you, are drug dealers, because I think selling drugs negates your service to your government. And I don't take people who have sex offenses. Those, but everybody else is a case-by-case basis. So they come to us, and our case is true diversion. Other counties make them plead. I don't do that. The reason why is because when you're in the military, you put your right hand up, and you say you will serve, protect, defend, and maybe even die for your country. So when someone pleads guilty, you're saying, I'm guilty. I don't want you to use that hand for that.
Right.
So I don't make them plead. It's total diversion. It's a complete carrot.
Whoa.
So when you come to my court, if you will be treated, if you will remain abstinent, and you do all the treatment, you know, and treatment hurts, because trauma hurts. You got to dig into it, you know? And so do all these things, and then you will get your case dismissed and expunged.
Without?
Wow. You don't got to put your hand up.
Because I think
your hand stays intact. You're still a hero with that hand. You're not a criminal with that hand.
I think that's so traumatic for people to do that. Mm-hmm. I've seen enough people.
It's a switch.
It is a
switch. I want you to keep being the hero, not the criminal.
I think it's, that's amazing, oh my gosh, I love that. I love that you do that. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. That means a lot.
Yeah, so they get dismissed and expunged. And so you have to have, after you finish your last treatment, like let's say you have DWI, then maybe there's treatment, inpatient, outpatient, maybe 90-90, whatever, right? And also you visit with a probation officer, you take, you know, drug test, you take urine test, you take everything, you visit with me, and sometimes the judge shows up on your porch. Because there's home visits too.
Wow. You just showed up. You showed up.
Hi. And sometimes if you're in rehab on your, you know, your mama's day, your parents' day, family day, I'm like, hi, what's going on?
Oh my
gosh.
That is
so funny. That's what Judge Collins did last week. What'd you do last week, you piece of shit?
I know. I don't deserve to live.
Wow, that's amazing. I didn't know that. All that.
So now we've done, and I get these grants. I want to tell you about the grants.
Okay.
So when I first got there, we had no money, right? Mm-hmm. So the first year I wrote a grant for $200, then I wrote a grant for $250.
Through the VA?
The Veterans Commission in Austin.
Okay.
And I want to tell you where they get the money too. So I wrote the grant. So this last grant I wrote for $500, and they said, no ma'am, get lost. You've lost your mind. You're too big for your britches. Mm-hmm. So I had to go down to Austin and beg in that tsunami we had in May. So I get there and they said, all right, you can have it. So I have $500,000.
For your veterans court?
Mm-hmm.
From the commission.
Mm-hmm.
Good for you.
So I'll tell you what I do with it and tell you where they get the money, because I want them to have more money. So what I do with the money is, you know, when you're drinking and driving, of course you need a car device, right? That's like, I don't know, 180 a month. You need a leg device, right? If you don't drive, you're going to walk. But I don't want you drinking. That's 380. You need a patch because you're doing drugs. That's $64 every 10 days. Different treatments. Maybe you didn't get the right discharge, so you're not eligible. So I will pay for those things in the community. Whoa. Different stuff. Whatever it is, I pay for it. Like military sexual trauma, that's in Pittsburgh. So we've got to get those people there and different stuff. Sometimes you need like a stack of toiletries, whatever. So we pay for all these things, and that's what the money's for. And I have three employees that are paid for.
Off that grant. Wow.
And so now we've done some branding with our money. So now we are totally branded. I paid to have this branding done.
Veterans Treatment Court.
So these are going to be in jail. So when people are arraigned, this pocket, I know it sounds crazy, but I measured it so it fits in your jail pocket. Mm-hmm. So when you're arraigned and maybe you're still under the influence of what has happened or what you've been through, or alcohol or drugs, stick that in your pocket and you can think about me later and find me later.
Is this modeled off of something that you'd heard about? Or
no.
It's just awesome.
There's something about this.
I love this.
This level of judicial compassion is so important to me. I think we get so caught up in like, this is the law and roll out the, like that we forget that people are people, and courts like this give me a little bit of hope.
Most of it is people.
Look at this.
I love that.
So when the guy came to see me and we're talking, I tried to tell him my ethos and what I thought. I said, it's like these veterans, it's like they're the phoenix rising out of the ashes. So he goes, flames? So he made these initially flames. I was like, no, we're military. Make my flames stripes.
I love your your logo.
And so for listeners, she has this like badge logo she's showing us where they, instead of having flames, have orange, red, deep red stripes. That's awesome.
And an eagle.
Yeah, he's the phoenix rising out of the ashes. So let's look at these. So these are coins. So in the military, and these are for you.
Thank you.
In the military, when you first come in, you have a challenge coin. Mm-hmm. And a challenge coin, ordinarily in the military, is everybody has one in the unit, right? So if you throw it down, then everybody in the table or around it better have their coin or they got to buy the beer.
Right.
If you throw it down and everybody has a coin, then I got to buy the beer. The guy who throws it, right? So it's a game that we play in the military. And so I encourage my people, like when you get to your unit, that's part of you belonging. So in my unit, they belong to me. We're a funky family. Like we're not the Brady Bunch, but we ain't the Adams family either, right? So I give them a coin and I tell them, I challenge you to challenge your buddies, your family, to push-ups, to water, to cupcakes, to ranking on me. You know, you can make your mama jokes about me. I don't care. Whatever you want to do, but I challenge you to challenge them to something healthy.
Wow. Other than drinking or
no
drugging.
Drinking. Because we have a military drinking culture.
I love this so much. I know.
It is such a drinking culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. Oh, my gosh.
So you guys can challenge each other to whatever you like. You're not having problems like my friends.
So challenge accepted now to like all of the third mics, because I don't know if they're going to be able to measure up to you, Judge Collins.
This is our first medal. But awesome. This
where
is
we
great.
Get the money though, is the Texas Veterans Commission gets the money from, there's these six scratch off tickets.
And from here, that's right.
You so have to we should go buy lotto tickets.
I'm not encouraging gambling. What I'm saying is, if you're built that way and if you're of that persuasion, there are six, but you have to ask for them.
Yes, that's right. That's right. I knew that. That goes all to the Veterans Commission.
You say, may I have a veteran scratch-off?
Veteran scratch-off.
And all the money goes to the Veterans Commission. And so all these places across Texas write these things. Like one person I know writes a grant for housing for veterans, like sober living houses. One person I know writes a grant for Boys and Girls Clubs to help service member children.
Sure.
So there's all kind of crazy grants that people write that have to do with veterans, and the money all comes from the Texas Veterans Commission.
Is it a compulsory when a veteran gets a DWI or domestic abuse or something that they go to you, or do they have to request to come into your court?
They have to find me. They have to request to come to my court, and we vet them.
Okay.
So
it's not like, hey, I'm a veteran, I get to opt out.
If you're a veteran and you get a DWI, I mean, this is the only way to get a DWI expunged in Texas.
Wow.
It's the only way.
I mean, that's DWIs. I mean, as terrible as they are, they also economic, what they put people in for economics.
The surcharges are outrageous.
I mean, you just can't recover.
Yeah.
And how do you work when you can't drive?
Right. Working people can't recover.
The system's designed to create a spiral, it feels like. And courts like this are just amazing. Thank you. That's great.
Woo! Okay. We love it. Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you for being on. And our guest today launched her campaign for Texas Railroad Commission this week. She's an oil and gas attorney and an engineer and a community leader. Krista Castaneda will be on the podcast this week.
Yay!
But as always, we have to start our show with Hit the Headlines. The tapes are out. The tapes are out.
Yes.
Calls for House Speaker Dennis Bonin's resignation are growing.
If you don't want to listen to Michael Quinn Sullivan's stupid stories straight from the horse's mouth, you could go to your podcast library and you will find a
rendition.
Dramatic reading of the transcripts that Lillian, me, and Carol Ramal did. Tried to get it to you quickly, but the tapes are out. They released the Michael Quinn Sullivan, Dennis Bonin tapes, and buddy, they were a doozy.
They were lots more juicy than I thought they'd be, quite frankly.
God.
Basically saying that, let's see, there's 20 large cities, the 20 largest cities in the country, six of them are in Texas, and the state of Texas, Speaker of the House, basically said, those cities and counties don't have any clout in Texas. I mean,
he basically said that, but he verbatim said worse. He said, I want next session to be the worst session possible for cities and counties. I hate cities and counties. We hate cities and counties. We want to destroy cities and counties.
It's not good. That's not good.
I mean, maybe I'm just a liberal piece of shit, but I think.
Which he also said.
He referred to his colleagues as liberal pieces of shit. Anyways, it's remarkable. Instead of covering it, go back and listen to the bonus episode. If you don't want to listen to the transcript, fast forward to the end where we kind of talk about it. But they were quite a doozy.
Yeah.
Quite a doozy. Seven Republicans have called for Speaker Bonin's resignation. No Republican has come to his defense. And the House GOP caucus is beginning their weekend retreat on Friday at 1 o'clock. So
happy retreat.
Oh, to be a fly on that wall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure somebody will be taping something. They're probably got Secret Service out there making sure no one's recording anything.
I'm having a level of schadenfreude that is not healthy.
I love that word.
I feel like the biggest crime out of all of it isn't the bribery. It's
disrespect.
Having to listen to Michael Quinn Sullivan, MQS, I call him Mucus, having to listen to Mucus's long World War II stories. That's the biggest crime.
The fact that he knew he was taping and he talked so much about the 75th anniversary at Normandy makes me think that he is a frustrated theater guy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when you listen to it, it's very clear that, like, he knew he was recording it and was putting on a show.
Yes.
Like, I mean, it was obnoxious.
He's a strange little bird.
Well, we don't know what's going to happen to the Speaker of the House, Dennis Bonin. Quite frankly, I don't give a shit.
I really don't. I mean, he doesn't need to be going back to the Texas Capitol.
He has no right to even hold his House seat anymore.
I agree.
Let alone the speakership.
Yeah, if the Republicans don't take him out, that'd be really surprising. They must be crazy then.
I think that people should put on blast every Democrat who put out a statement and said he shouldn't return as Speaker next session. No, you should be putting out a statement saying he needs to resign right now.
That's the response, Democrats. That's the response.
It is not he should not return. You're weak. No, he needs to go away. Go away.
Come on, Democrats.
Unacceptable for him to talk about his colleagues like that.
All right. Next headline. Trump holds Dallas rally, says Texas made a fortune off of Hurricane Harvey. What the heck is he talking about? What did he do? I didn't get to see any of the rally, obviously. But was it sold out and everything? Was there are lots of people there?
So many.
Were there?
Traffic was such a hot mess.
It wasn't, because we were in Houston, but I just was so hoping maybe nobody would go.
He said that we made a killing. We made a killing off of Hurricane Harvey, man. We made a fortune off of it. Just because of the grants that we got to rebuild after over 100 Texans were killed and $125 billion of damage was done to our community. We're so lucky to have had Hurricane Harvey.
His ethos is so different from the rest of us.
I get so mad when I walk in the VA and I see his picture there as our commander-in-chief. It just makes my blood boil.
Yeah,
me too. Could you imagine still being in the service?
I worry about my friends. I worry about the children in my family. It's part of kind of what we do in the Collins family. Mm-hmm. I worry about the children in my family. I worry about my friends that are still in, people that are going, what it used to be like, and what you look up to your commander-in-chief, or at least not repulsed by him and afraid of what he might do to you.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And what he might do to, you know, the Syrian Turkey thing, I'm not going to talk about
we're gonna
it,
get
but
there
it's
in
upsetting.
A
it's so upsetting.
It's a headline. We're going to get there. You're going to have to talk about it. Better O'Rourke had a counter rally. I believe Judge Collins was there. So why don't you tell us about it? Because we weren't.
It was like a well-oiled machine. Honestly, it was...
Who was there? Stevie Wonder was there?
No. That's, we were supposed to walk out when the Stevie Wonder song came on, but okay. It ended up being a different song. A Change Is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke. But it was amazing.
Also
I've
good.
Never, ever seen anything so... It was seamless, flawless. You know, I walked in after going through Trump traffic. So it took me an hour to get there. Oof. From North Park Mall. I'd been having a mediation there. An hour to get there. I walk in. I'm even kind of late. And they're like, come in. Sign your paper. We're going to take you to your seat. Seat's just fine.
Did they ask for your ID? They just say good-looking woman with a really awesome outfit on, let her in. Something like that, right?
I don't want to talk about it, but the outfit.
I think they've heard stories of Judge Collins, all and right, they knew exactly who here we go. She was.
The outfit was fly because I'd been in court all day. I'd been in a mediation, so it just happened
just
to be a fly.
Say.
Were there a lot of people at the Beto event?
It was full, like from the bottom to the ceiling.
Wow.
I didn't realize it because I got there early, you know, before it filled up. And so by the time I got on stage, because they asked for all the candidates and electeds to come up there because they wanted to take a picture with Beto when it was over. And so I got on stage and I was like, this is so amazing. Just a huge, huge, huge happy room.
Right, 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 right.
You know, just spirit filled. Like everybody was happy to be there and just so excited. It was just a nice day.
Awesome.
So of the people who spoke, because the top tier Senate candidates were all there speaking, who stood out to you as giving impressive speeches?
I would say...
Not saying that you're endorsing them. I'm just
no,
saying,
not,
like,
no.
From a political perspective watching it, who did you think was impressive?
Who got the crowd jazzed?
So I would say that, of course, our Senator West, because
awesome.
He's just, he knows how
great
to do that.
Speaker.
He knows how to do that. It gets everybody all excited. Mm-hmm. And it's hometown thing, too. And I like the ladies. Mm-hmm. You know, all three of the ladies were talking all kind of stuff. Like, they each had their thing, their shtick. You know, one's talking about this, one's talking about that, one gets you riled up about, everybody got you riled up about a thing.
Cool.
And they were great. I enjoyed them. Not
good.
Because I'm a girl, it's not an estrogen thing, but they got us really riled up and they weren't doing kitschy things.
Right, 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 right. Yeah. Good.
Good. Dang. Well, that was exciting.
I gotta watch it.
Just the comparison between Trump rallies and Beto rallies or Democrat rallies are just remarkable. I can't wait until there are no more Trump rallies.
That'll be a good day for the country and the world. Okay, next headline. U.S. House, including most Texas members, vote in disapproval of Trump's Syria actions.
There are only seven Republican members of the Texas delegation to Congress that voted against this measure. Babin, Burgess, Carter, Gohmert, Lance Gooden, who used to be a good guy and lost his goddamn mind, Weber, Williams, all voted. All the other Republicans voted in favor of it. I mean, it's just what he's done in
what's he doing? What's he just going to let the
just
Kurds?
No morality.
It's the Kurds. I mean, they're just letting the Kurds get slaughtered.
It's horrible. It's I think it's very, very irresponsible. You know, it's kind of like you left them out there.
Right.
We're there protecting and we're saying, hey, don't bother our friends. Then we're like, oh, no, we're gone. Go ahead. Get them. They're yours. Just steamroll over them. That worries me. I just think it's so irresponsible. I don't think it's that he's never been in the military, because we have had many commanders-in-chief
sure.
that I've respected and gladly follow anywhere that haven't been in the military.
Have leadership skills.
But uh-huh. the fact that you don't care about the repercussions, you don't care about what happens when you leave, there's an infrastructure. And you also have people who are in great danger who've assisted the U.S.
Yep.
You know, you have that.
Well,
and
imagine,
you put those people in grave danger for having helped us.
Imagine being on the ground and working with the Kurds to secure the area. I mean, those are your friends that you've mm-hmm. been working with mm-hmm. for however long you've been deployed there. And then you're told to just step back and watch them all get massacred.
Mm-hmm.
I mean...
it's uncomfortable.
And there was no gradual, you know, let's leave. You know, we're going to have this many troops this year, this many... Goodbye, we're
no,
out right now.
No plan. No plan.
No.
That's what he does. He
it's just immoral.
It's just so vitriolic, everything
Every
he does.
Person that wears one of those goddamn red hats should be humiliated. I hope it scarlet stains their forehead. I'm never voting for somebody that supports Donald Trump ever in my life. I'll never do it. I'll be 80 years old. I'll be looking back to people's voting records. I'm not doing it.
I am in
it's
complete
disgusting.
Agreement. All right, next headline. Democratic hopefuls for John Cornyn's seat, the United States Senate here in Texas, unveiled their third quarter fundraising figures, which shows a lot.
Fundraising. Royce West got his numbers in. He raised $550,000 this quarter. $200,000 of it is a loan to himself. So he raised $350,000. He spent $173,000, has $377,000 cash on hand. Amanda Edwards raised $557,000. No loans to herself. Spent $220,000, has $338,000 cash on hand. Christina Simpson Ramirez raised $459,000, spent $234,000, has $225,000 cash on hand. Chris Bell raised $207,000, including a $10,000 loan to himself, spent $95,000, has $112,000 cash on hand. MJ Hager, top the pack, raised $1 million. She spent, though, $731,000.
Yikes.
Has $894,000 cash on hand. Let's stop and talk about that for a second. That burn rate is remarkable.
What's her burn rate that much for? What's she doing? Is she digital acquisition?
Or? I haven't seen that enough of her stuff for her to have spent $731,000. I mean, I've been seeing her digital ads and stuff, but I mean, like, not that much.
I see of her than anybody else. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Maybe she's investing early. She's been running, as she said on our podcast, for the general. So.
Yeah,
she's not running a primary race. She's running a general race.
Well, Cornyn also had his numbers come in. He raised $3.2 million, spent $1.5 million, and has $10.8 million cash
Yikes.
On hand. So fuck our lives.
That does not look good.
Well, million. It's fine. I feel like we were spoiled by the last Senate race where we
had somebody who raised $80 million.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm not even impressed by $10.8 million cash on hand.
Yeah.
No. Which I should be, but I'm just not.
Yep. All right. Next headline. Democrats go head-to-head in the third presidential primary debate. I did not like that debate at all.
Wow.
It was just people just beating up on Liz Warren, man. I just didn't like it. I know they're entitled to. Pete Buttigieg, in my opinion, came across as a little bit of a pissant to me. I didn't like how he was. I didn't like his anger. I didn't like when Beto referred to Liz Warren as that she was being punitive. They just, I know they all got to do it because they see these poll numbers and everything, but the men came across as little bitches and the women, they just did. And I just like, I'm just so over Mayor Pete right now.
Well,
I may forgive him later. I'll forgive Beto for sure, but I didn't think their strategy was a good one at all. I thought Bernie did well. I thought Liz did well. I thought Amy Klobuchar did well, but I just was not impressed with Mayor Pete. I like Mayor Pete.
To me, Beto and Pete going like they did really opened the floor up for Amy Klobuchar, right? Like,
yeah.
She suddenly has this path that may not have existed before then.
Yeah.
But I'll say I'm glad that people were going after Elizabeth Warren. Not because I don't like her. I like her, but I don't want an untested candidate running in the general. And everybody's given her a pass in the last few debates. No one's logged a single attack on her when they've been doing it to each other. And I think it's important that we have a tested candidate. I'm not saying that they should go at her with daggers and just start stabbing and like making some changes that are irreversible or some
irrevocable
charges that are irrevocable. But I'm saying that, you know, challenging on her on her policies, she didn't stand well when it happened. And that to me came across, and I want that to happen to her more so that she learns a little bit better about protecting that whenever people are attacking it.
Nobody understands healthcare. Nobody understands pricing. Nobody understands the system. It's all bullshit. Everybody's saying everything out there. Nobody understands it well enough that they can argue about it, talk about it, or anything else. And so she's one of her only hopes on this subject matter, in my opinion. And everybody else is full of shit. So that's what
How'd you think it went?
There was more fighting than usual. I was disappointed the way that the Buttigieg and Beto interaction. I didn't like that. I was shocked at how good Bernie was feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he looked like $1 million.
He did. I don't know if it helped his temperament or
what.
Well,
he always does.
No, he didn't. He looked better.
He looked better than he always does.
He did. He looked like he was feeling better, and he was maybe a little less grumpy.
Okay. He's grumpy because he's been talking about this stuff for 45 years.
Somebody looked at him and said, you need to smile more. And he started doing
Isn't this line, I wrote the damn thing or something? That's
I wrote the damn bill. Love me some Bernie.
Well, okay. I can't wait for all that. I don't know why I'm so disinterested in the presidential.
I wish seven of them would get out. Seven of them need to get out of this race. Seven of them need to get out. We need to start doing what we do. For one, we need a lot of their staffers to come and help us in Texas win back the Texas House. So please, when y'all get off these other campaigns, call Pod Bless Texas. We got campaigns for you to work on.
Does Lillian have seven that she wants to leave specifically?
Oh, go ahead. Start putting people on blast. I think John Delaney's still in the race.
I mean, I just hope. I was just curious. I hope Liz Warren's standing. I hope Bernie's standing. I wouldn't mind if Beto's standing. I wouldn't mind if Kamala or Amy's standing. I wouldn't even mind if Andrew Yang's standing.
But you're not mentioning the guy that's polling 10 points higher than everyone else across the entire country.
Well, I only want him standing if everybody understands that I'll be moving out of the country because we won't win.
Oh, whatever. That is such horseshit.
We're never going to win with the candidate of Joe Biden. You won't get out the base.
I disagree.
Okay, so I love Joe Biden, but I just don't think this is his race.
Throwing my coin on the table.
Okay, all right, I'm throwing mine too.
I mean, I'll buy you guys some beer because I gave you my coins. I don't have one.
All right. Anyway, that's it. That was Hit the Headlines. And when we come back, we'll have Krista Castaneda on to discuss her race for the Texas Railroad Commission. So stick around.
I love Krista Castaneda.
Hey there, Pod Plus Texas listeners.
How are ya?
We're so thrilled that you're listening and just wanted to let you know that we would love, love, love if you could join our podcast through our Patreon membership.
www.patreon.com. Search for Pod Bless Texas. You're going to get all kinds of good content. You want show notes? We have show notes in there. Special episodes. All kinds of stuff if I ever actually keep up with it. Go to the Patreon and contribute to help us keep this sucker rolling because it's a bit of a money pit for us.
Yeah, and you can join even as just $5 a month helps out so we can make sure that we can keep our relationship with our studio that sometimes wants payment and all
they're
the way
really
up
weird about that.
They are. You can be a councilman or a governor or a senator, or you can give us $250 a month and run our show.
Just for clarification, those are sponsorship tiers, not actual positions.
Yeah, we have no positions.
Become a patron today! The shirt you're wearing right now sucks! Go to www.podblitztexas.com. Head over to our merch store and get a better one!
Yeah, we have great shirts. Our logo is one of the best in the world, actually.
People are saying.
Yeah, and we also have mugs, shower curtains, sweatshirts, hoodies.
Duvets!
Duvet covers.
Not only is it our logo, you can get things for Lillian Salerno for 2020. You can get minor celebrity majorly drunk. You can tell Dan Patrick to go fuck himself.
Yeah, there's all that kind of merchandise. And all you got to do is go on www.podblesstexasmerch and you can order
that's
your...
not it. That's not it.
Whatever
okay,
it is.
Go to the website and click the store.
Yeah.
It's...
buy some. We get a little bit of it, but basically we just want to... we just want you to be walking around with our merch because it makes us feel better.
It makes us feel way better.
Thank you.
Buy a shirt!
Welcome back to Pod Bless Texas. With us today is the remarkably qualified woman who stood up this week to seek the only state level office on the 2020 ballot. She's an oil and gas attorney, an engineer, a community leader, an SMU law grad, and will be the first Democrat elected to statewide office since the early 90s. Krista Castaneda.
Yay!
Thanks for running.
Thank you for hosting me here.
Before we ask you a bunch of questions, we want everyone to hear your ad. So let's roll the video that you put out with your launch on Wednesday.
Hi, I'm Krista Castaneda, and I'm running for Texas Railroad Commission. You might be asking, what is the Texas Railroad Commission? That's a good question. You see, the Railroad Commission doesn't regulate railroads anymore. So the name might not make sense, but the commission's job is no joke. It protects our natural resources like oil and gas, it protects our property rights, and it ensures the safety of Texas communities. And that does make sense. I'm an attorney, but I'm also an engineer. My dad's an engineer. He helped NASA put a man on the moon. My two sisters are engineers, and my brother's an engineer. You see, engineers like it when things make sense. And I know oil and gas. I've worked in the industry for 35 years, from boardrooms to wellheads, representing operators to landowners and companies big and small. So why am I running for railroad commissioner? Well, I grew up in a farmhouse, kind of like this one. And when we finally got air conditioning, my dad was forever hollering out, "Shut the door, we're not gonna air condition the outside." I was raised to know that wasting energy didn't make sense. But here's the thing, the Texas Railroad Commission is supposed to stop waste in the oil and gas industry. At this very minute, oil companies are lighting on fire enough natural gas to power the city of Houston. It's called flaring. As commissioner, Ryan Sitton has been letting oil and gas operators, including Chinese-owned companies, waste billions of dollars of our natural gas. The fires light up all of West Texas. We might as well be burning cash. The worst part is we already have laws to stop that waste, but Commissioner Sitton refuses to enforce them, and that makes no sense at all. Texans deserve someone who will enforce the law and look out for all of us. Let's stop wasting energy. I'm Krista Castaneda, and I'm running to get the Railroad Commission back on track.
What the heck is flaring?
Flaring, what is it?
Okay, when you produce an oil well, especially in the Permian, you get an amount of natural gas that's naturally produced with the oil. You're only supposed to be able to light that natural gas on fire for the 10 days after you bring a well online. That's the law. But oil and gas producers say there's not enough pipeline capacity to take that natural gas away. And because the price of gas has been low lately, they find that it's cheaper to just light it on fire. So we are literally lighting on fire enough energy to power the city of Houston continuously.
Wow. That's just ridiculous.
Well, and what doesn't make any sense to me is the fact that there are other alternatives. You could generate electricity on site. You can hook the flare into a natural gas generator and turn it into electricity, which you can use to power all the oil and gas operations nearby. And there's a lot of need for electricity just right there. You could put it into the grid if you're near the grid. You probably have heard of the ERCOT saying that's the people who control the electricity grid saying, hey, we might have some brownouts here because we don't have enough electricity right now to supply the entire state in those hot months. There's all kinds of things that make a lot more sense than simply lighting it on fire.
So this isn't a red or a blue issue. This is just a common sense issue. This isn't about being a Democrat or Republican.
Sure seems common sense to me.
I guess I don't understand. The Railroad Commission is supposed to regulate oil and gas in Texas. It doesn't sound like they're doing that much regulating.
I think that's exactly right, especially when it comes to this issue. So you have to get an exception permit to be able to flare beyond the 10 days. Nobody goes in and contests whether the exception permits are granted. So they're just granted. The commissioners don't raise any objection to them. There was a contested permit just recently where there was pipeline capacity to take the gas out, but the oil company said it costs too much. They were fought by the pipeline company and the oil company won. So they get to keep flaring.
Wow.
Yeah, crazy.
So it's just it's like a common sense issue. It's an environmental issue.
Yeah,
I ought to
emphasize the health impact of this too, right? So you're lighting all this natural gas on fire. It creates volatile organic compounds, VOCs, the things that give people asthma and headaches and lung problems and health problems. Obviously, there's methane-related concerns. There's greenhouse gas-related concerns, all of which can be made much, much better by doing something else, like converting it to electricity.
I feel like people don't pay enough attention to the railroad commissioners. And for those who don't know, there are three railroad commissioners in Texas. They're all three Republicans, which provides no diversity of thought. But I feel like people don't pay attention to it, but it's such a large factor in the Texas economy. What do you do in your life to prepare you to run for railroad commissioner? Who is Krista Castaneda?
Well, since the time I was the youngest girl, I decided I wanted to be a railroad commissioner, right?
Choo-choo!
And then I learned what the Railroad Commission did. So what I did was I got an engineering degree. I worked in the oil and gas industry before I went to law school. Since I've been a lawyer, I have been involved in courtrooms in all the places where they keep the oil and gas, such as Pecos, Texas, and Cotulla, Texas, litigating commercial cases on really all sides of the industry. Sometimes I represent the landowners, sometimes I represent the companies, sometimes I represent big investors, and try to sort out what is really a pretty complicated business, but I love it. I have loved doing it for the last 35 years.
What is it? What is it that makes it? Like, Krista and I actually went to law school together, and she was at the front of the class. I was at the back of the class. And I still remember, wasn't it Professor Lowe that taught oil and gas at SMU?
He did.
And you were in that class. You knew everything. I knew nothing.
I don't know that I knew everything.
But what was it about oil and gas that, like, was it because you're so sort of science-based as a the way your brain works because you're an engineer? Or what was it that, like, that attracted you more than, say, criminal defense or corporate securities?
Yeah, so I have a degree in engineering, and I really have always loved the way things work. I love understanding technology. I love people who are out there doing real things, and the oil and gas industry is real. You can go out there, you can see people turning wrenches and drilling wells and laying pipeline, and there's just a real sense of something tangible, that we're producing a product, and I just have always loved that. Plus, in the law, I love, you know, looking at all the details and figuring out who's doing what to whom and how do we get it sorted out. And it's just been a lot of fun.
So for those who are on, you know, for Texas, we're such a big state. And when people talk about the environment, you get these levels of, you know, who's representing oil companies, who's the enviros, who's the clean energy. For the task at hand with the Railroad Commission, what's your message to them? It's like, let's just go and get some stuff done? Or is it,
absolutely,
I'm going to evaluate it based on fact? Or, like, how do you appeal to all those different classes of, or levels of thought about the environment and oil and gas in general?
On the top level, everybody knows we can do something that makes more sense than what we're doing right now, which is lighting it on fire.
We are always talking about fire when we talk about dumpster fire.
Well, lots of dumpster fires these days.
And I think across the spectrum, there are going to be a lot of people who just get, there's better ways to do this than we are currently doing it, including the environmentalists, who are obviously all about cleaning up the environment, including a lot of the oil companies who have taken on in their corporate responsibility mandate to go in and do things better in terms of reducing their greenhouse gas emissions, in terms of reducing their environmental impact. I mean, nobody's monolithic in their approach to this. And I really think that between technology, conversation, some hard discussions, we can move the needle on this. We can make things better.
There aren't a lot of female engineers.
Period.
I mean, there just aren't. Let's talk a little bit about that. Like, when you were going to school to be an engineer, did you feel that there were barriers that kind of made it a little bit more difficult for you versus other people that would have been in your class?
I'll be honest. You are absolutely right, but I have never thought, and maybe it's just the benefit of my upbringing, I have never thought that I can't do it because I'm a girl. I've never thought that.
Yay, mom and dad. Yeah, that's a tribute to them.
But we know, because I actually do work in this subject in a nonprofit capacity, I am trying very hard to get more girls to think about the things that they can do with an engineering degree, which may be something completely different than engineer, you know. I don't practice engineering. I use my training to do other things. I think that there's such an opportunity to reach young women to say, if you are ambitious, if you want to really understand business, if you really want to make your mark in the world, go get this degree, because you can go anywhere. If you can do engineering, you can do almost anything.
That's so true. Wow. Wow. I know my brother studied engineering at the University of Texas, and I just remember when you go to those functions, we all went because there was all men, right? There
was just there.
That's what I remember.
Okay.
Yeah, it was terrible. But you never saw women in those groups.
I gotta tell you a line I heard the other day, which I just love. So apparently the women who are in engineering school have a line that says, "The odds are good, but the goods are odd."
Oh, wow. That's so true. I love that. One thing we also know about you, Krista, is those of us here in the North Texas area know that you've been a big supporter of women in politics.
Yes.
And women running and women, young women leaders. Tell us a little bit about that. I think are you still on the Texas Women's Foundation?
Yes. Board? So the Texas Women's Foundation is a foundation that makes grants to all kinds of organizations that improve the economic welfare and security of women in women's lives. And so it's a big organization. I'm lucky to serve with some really impressive women on that board, and it's just been great. But if you back up about, probably 20 years ago, I started working really pretty heavily in the issue of trying to get women to run for office. I believe that we deserve equal representation in office, and not enough of us run. And so we really need a woman on the ballot every race, every cycle. And I've been working with Ignite Texas to help young women claim their political ambition and learn how to run their own campaigns, get involved politically, know who controls what issues in our government so that they can be better informed about really all aspects of political life.
Which brings up a really interesting thought that I haven't had until right now. When you are successful in your Railroad Commission race next November, that will make the Railroad Commission 2/3 women. Has that ever been the case? Has there ever been a governmental entity that's that? I mean, that's amazing.
You mean a commission?
Yeah.
That's a great question.
I don't know. We'll have to go back.
That's great.
Yeah.
That will be great. That will be great.
So those are what? How many? Those are what? 6-year terms, right?
They're 6-year terms.
Holy moly!
Yeah, you elect every 2 years.
Do you get to pay the pittance that they pay the rest of the state executives in Texas? Are you allowed to keep doing your other work?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Right.
Seems like as a commissioner, you would be.
Yeah. That's amazing. Looking around the table, I'm just kind of realizing that
everybody's smarter than you.
I'm amongst remarkable women. And
well, you're the only non-lawyer at the table also.
Right. Wow. I'm just going to eat my cough drops.
Hey, it's not too late.
I actually said that to him the other day.
They won't accept me into the bar.
You've certainly been to enough of them.
My study partner in law school was 54. It's never too late. I went at 33.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
It's never too late.
Yeah. I know. Okay. We have a great public law school right here in Dallas.
Okay, everybody, stop recruiting me to law schools.
That would be awesome.
These people.
You know, we can run you for judge.
I have to go to school first. Couldn't I just run for JP?
Yeah, you could.
You could.
Then I could be judged without all that hard work.
I don't know. Some JPs would tell you it's pretty hard.
I know. It's a joke. It's a joke. JPs, don't write me. I don't care. So this is really exciting. What stands out in your head as being the most exciting thing about the next year for you?
Oh, well, get to meet all the people in the state of Texas that I can possibly meet. I mean, that's the excitement of a campaign, right? If you don't really like meeting people, I wouldn't suggest running for public office.
Don't run.
But you know, I so far it's been amazing. I've already gotten calls from around the state. You know, the club in Big Spring wants me to come out. The club in Burleson, because called twice. They wanted to know if I could be at breakfast this morning. Of course, they called me about 30 minutes before the breakfast started, so it was a little hard to get out there.
I'm sure you'll make it over there. That's exciting. Is there a part of Texas that you've always wanted to see that you haven't been to before that maybe in the campaign you can plan some trips around?
You know, I haven't spent as much time in East Texas as a lot of people have.
Kendall's jam over there.
I know. That's what I hear. I mean, I've spent a lot of time in West Texas and the Panhandle and down in the Valley and down in South Texas. But it's real East Texas. There's not as much oil out there. There hadn't been as much business travel out there.
A lot of pine trees.
Lots of trees. Well, that's crazy exciting.
I think you ought to take her over to Frog Knot.
I'll take you out there for sure. We're going to do a trip because Krista Castaneda is hands down my pick for railroad commissioner, and I can't wait to vote for you in the primary and in the general. This is just what a phenomenal candidate. We're lucky to have you on the ballot.
Thanks for running.
Thank you so much for coming in today, but you don't get to leave yet because before you go, we have to play everyone's favorite segment. It's called Obsessed. Obsessed! For each of us are going to talk about one news story from the week, whether it was politics or it wasn't, that we've been completely obsessed with. And as always, we like to start this segment with Lillian Salerno. Lillian, what have you been obsessed with this week?
So many things, but I woke up today thinking about decoupling, but not in the Gwyneth Paltrow kind of way. I thought about decoupling around healthcare and health insurance. And the reason I thought about that is I'm really concerned about the rates of entrepreneurship in the country. They've never been this low. People just aren't out there starting small businesses. We've got this huge concentration of wealth and income inequality because of not enough people are starting their own businesses. When they start, they get gobbled up. And I believe truthfully that lots of people don't start their own businesses because they're worried about healthcare. So my friend Kendall over there is working on this project and others. And we were talking about when he leaves his other job, which is today. Yay, hooray. Congratulations. And part of his worry is, where's he gonna get healthcare for what we're doing? Nobody will cover us. No, I'm just kidding. With our drinking, no one will cover us. No, right. But part of that is, do I have to go and get an eye appointment or a dental appointment before I leave? And then you think, you get scared about starting your own thing. And I think about, I mean, I've started a few businesses in my career, and that is always, for me, it doesn't. I'm a risk taker, so I just do it. But it's so hard on people. And this idea that you get special things because you work for the government, or you're a veteran, or you're a teacher, or you work for Google, you get some health insurance, and then you're out there busting your tail to come up with a new widget or a new something, and you don't have any safety net. So we need to decouple health insurance from employers, I believe. That's my obsess.
That's a great obsess, Lillian. I like you putting all my business out there for everybody to hear. It's wonderful.
I know you do. They'll send health insurance inquiries to you now.
Right. Great. Now my mailbox is going to be full. Don't you tell people my address.
I don't even know it. That's
a great obsess, Lillian. Good obsessed! Dominique, what is something this week that you have been completely obsessed with?
I was thinking about something else, but now when Krista started talking about the flaring, I got really bothered and my butt's on fire about it. Speaking of fire.
Might as well be on fire, everything else is.
Right, because when I was in the first Gulf War, you know, Saddam burnt those oil fields. Mm-hmm. And I was there, and it was dark, and then I got asthma.
Really?
Yeah, I never had it in my life.
Wow.
Really?
So now you're talking about that we're doing that on U.S. soil where we have rules and regulations and we're not at war and we're doing that to our people. And so now I'm just mad about that.
Wow. That's really good.
I'm really mad about that.
Yeah, you should be. Or did it remediate? I mean, are you fine now?
So when I first got back from the war, I would get pneumonia like every year.
That's right. I heard that from other veterans.
Well,
yeah.
And then I'd get bronchitis every so often. And so now, just, you know, like I just got over a big allergy sinus thing. That happens to me now. I get a sinus infection. It's less than it used to be, mm-hmm. but I never had those problems before those oil fields.
Hmm. So interesting.
And then now people are making fire and flaring and
we have a choice.
It's against, yeah, we have a choice. And there are rules and no one's enforcing them. And they don't care about the people around them, the people who work there. That makes me mad.
It's just immoral, right? I mean, when you think about it like that, these companies have plenty of resources to be able to do something.
We have healthcare problems enough, and now you're going to give people
right
in the community health
issues. And I think it's the companies also. I mean, your duty is to your shareholders. And if the government or the regulators will let you go to that line, that's sort of what you do. They have ethical obligations, but I mean, that's why you need strong enforcement. Right?
Agreed. Agreed. You know, there's a an NBC video on this, a deeper dive on the issue, and they interview a nearby landowner. Sweet little man, and he looks up at the camera, and he's standing next to one of these flares that is, you know, 100 feet from his house, and he says, "It's just like being next to a jet engine taking off 24 hours a day."
Yeah.
I just can't even imagine what disgusting. It would be to, well, I drive around out there and I see it, and it's really, really surreal to see these things go. It really is.
You almost forget until you start talking about it how environmental justice is a real, it's a real thing. it's not just about like protecting the planet, which right. is very important, but I mean, it's about people having an opportunity to succeed. Like if you grow up with that next to your house, you are suddenly inhibited in a level that other people aren't. I mean,
the challenging thing though too is that they need the jobs. They like the economic development that all of this brings as well, but there are costs. And I just think we can do better on what everybody's having to pay in their health and their environment as a result of these practices. I just think there's better ways to do this.
That's a really great obsessed, Donnie. Obsessed.
Thanks, Judge.
Like Krista, what is something this week you've been completely obsessed
man.
With?
Oh, man. Right now I'm obsessed with the idea that I might ever sleep 8 hours a night again.
Running for a state life.
I can assure you, running from a district race, you will not.
I remember the days when I could sleep all night long and not wake up and think about the, I don't know, 3 hours of organizational activities I needed to do in my head, you know, between 2 and 5 a.m. That's an obsession. I'm kind of obsessed with the two viewpoints on the Nancy Pelosi standing up and looking over the table at Donald Trump photo, yeah. right? You know, because, I mean, it's like a Rorschach test. Mm-hmm. What do you see? Do you see her, you know, being a commanding woman, or do you see her being unhinged, you know? And so I just think that's so interesting, and it's really, like I said, a Rorschach test for how we view women in power in general. Right? Do we view them as strong leaders, or do we view them as out of place, out of line?
You know, I saw a tweet from Governor Jan Brewer today, who was the 22nd governor of Arizona. She was governor of Arizona during the Obama administration. And there was this big controversy whenever he landed in Arizona once, where she went out on the tarmac and kind of scolded him. And people were just talking about how remarkably racist Jan Brewer was for thinking that she can just walk in and act like she owns this guy and can tell him what to do. And she was tweeting about how, oh, when I do it, it's racist and it's unacceptable. But when Nancy Pelosi does it, she's an icon. And to me, it just amplified how these Republicans just don't understand that those aren't parallels. They have no concept of what Donald Trump is doing to our democracy. It's kind of like when you put a frog in a pot and slowly increase the temperature, they don't realize it's boiling.
Right.
They've just been like so acclimated to it, they don't even realize that those two things are not even remotely comparable.
Yep, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Oh, good obsessed. My obsessed this week is a recycled obsessed, because I told you before that I would never stop talking about a Liz Markowitz's race until it's over. And I'm not stopping yet. Yesterday, Lillian Salerno and I made our way down to Richmond, Texas, which was a very quick 4.5 hour drive.
Each way.
We went because we wanted to have an event for Liz Markowitz, who's running for House District 28, the seat vacated by Zerwas, so he could take his cush job at a hospital because he was terrified of his reelection prospects. It is the only seat in the state of Texas for the Texas House throughout the rest of the year that we had the opportunity to flip. And it was just so awesome to be able to go out down there, hang out with her. Our former lieutenant gubernatorial candidate, Mike Collier, came down and he was hanging out with us too. It was a great event, tons of great folks there. And you know, it was very assuring to me when I was talking to her, hearing about how allies all around the state have been chipping in and jumping in to help this seat. I mean, it's just so important. I mean, if we flip the Texas House, we could pick up 7 to 8 congressional seats. And so this is the
important.
This is the first. And so
she has a lot of pressure on her because of us talking about it and others. But just, you know, because it's like this bellwether in the whole country, if they see that seat flip towards us, all of a sudden the money comes pouring.
Right. So anyways, I've just been obsessed with it. I won't stop being obsessed with it. Early voting starts on Monday. If you live in that district, get your ass out and vote for Liz Markowitz. If you don't live in that district,
send her some money.
Dude, why are you giving money to presidentials? What? Meet me at the camera. Why are you giving money to somebody that's running for president right now in a 20-way primary? Their race is not for like months away. You can actually do something in this district. So buy her a beer. Send $5 to a Liz Markowitz because it's the most important seat, not only in Texas, but probably in the country. Absolutely. And it starts on Monday. So yep. Go support a Liz Markowitz.
And she's great people.
Amazing people. And that's what I've been completely obsessed with. And that was obsessed.
And you can go to our link at Pod Bless Texas, and we have a donate link for her.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go to our link. On our Facebook page and on our Twitter, we have it pinned at the top. Go and contribute to Liz Markowitz's race.
Krista, thank you for taking time out of your schedule to join us today. We so enjoyed it. But before you leave, tell us, how can people donate, help you out, sign up to volunteer? What do you need most?
Well, go online at KristaForTexas.com. The name is KristaForTexas.com. Please donate. We are getting off the ground, and tell your friends, like us on social. Please promote us on social so that we get the word out. Communications is everything right now.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And you can, and you're also on Twitter, right, at Christopher Texas.
Christopher Texas on all social. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, Railroad Commission race is so important, whether you know it or not. So
it's at the top of the ballot. It's real important for a bunch of reasons. And one of it, it's as people go down that ballot, they're going to see somebody, a real candidate, and they're going to stay on that ballot all the way down.
Let's hope.
Yes, they will.
From the White House to the courthouse. thank you, Krista, for coming on today. We appreciate you.
And Judge Dominique, tell us what's going on. How can people reach you? You're up for an election this cycle.
I am highly reachable. Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. On Instagram, I'm at DomJD04, because that's Dominique graduated with her Juris Doctorate in 2004.
Awesome.
It's a celebratory thing. Twitter, Facebook, everything. I'm around. I'm there. You're easily accessible. I will always write you back. I will always talk back to you as long as you're talking nice. If you are not, I will pretend as if you do not exist in my world.
So I love you.
She is so fantastic.
I know. All right. What about you, Mr. Scudder?
Folks can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, at Kendall Scudder.
Great. And people can find me at Lillian_Salerno or through on Twitter or through Pod Bless Texas. And we thank you all for being with us today. And if you've been obsessed with something this week and you'd like to tell us about it, send your 30 seconds or fewer video or email to info@PodBlessTexas, and we might play it. Thank you again for being with us today. And on behalf of myself and Kendall and the entire Pod Bless team, have a blessed week.
We'll see y'all next week. Mm-hmm.